welcome to the first episode of Riveting, the Portland Thorns podcast. My name is Eric Olson. You can find me at PortlandEric11 on Twitter. To my right is Patrick Chizik. You can find him everywhere at Chizik.
Just Google me.
Yeah, just Google him. Be sure not to do that at work, though.
Don't do the image search.
Yeah, I'd leave safe search on. I think that's
Yeah.
And to my other right is Emily.
Hi, my name's Emily. You can find me at WinTheDay848 on the Twitter machine.
So we're going to be talking about a number of topics tonight. First things first, there are a lot of changes that are happening with the Portland Thorns this offseason and moving into the 2016 season. First off, the Timbers have fired Paul Riley as head coach. They have replaced him with Mark Parsons, who comes from the Washington Spirit and also has experience in England. Interestingly, he's a 12-year-old that has about 20 years of soccer experience.
I'm so excited for him.
Additionally, we have 13 players from 2015 that are no longer part of the Thorns roster. So it's Io, Ryan Wilkinson, Steph Catley, Kaylin Kyle, McCall Zerboni, Rachel Van Hollebeck, Sinead Fairley, Claire Pokinghorn, Leanne Sanderson, Emily Kruger, Alyssa Kleiner, Nadine Ongerer, and some other player whom occasionally would pretend to be a striker.
I think I saw her on American Idol once.
Wasn't she Dancing with the Stars?
Oh, man. You know, I got confused.
I thought she was a ring girl in WWF.
Oh, yeah. No, that's definitely where I saw her.
No, she was fighting in UFC, I think.
Oh.
She got punched in the face by Ronda Rousey. Went down. There's tears and blood and... It was hot.
So Emily, which of the Thorns from 2015 who are no longer with us are you going to miss the most?
So I gave this question a little bit of thought, and can I actually say no one? I know everyone's really upset that Onger is no longer with us, and everybody's like really upset about Farley. And I know all the 13-year-old girls and boys, horny boys, are upset about Bacon leaving. But honestly, I'm not heartbroken about anyone. I'm a newer fan. Like, I'm so excited for the changes and the potential of this team that I'm just excited to see what's going to happen this season and all the new faces that are coming in, that I'm not heartbroken.
How about you, Patrick?
Well, the player that I'm going to miss the most on the pitch is Nadine Ongerer, of course, but she's still with us, sort of like Ben Kenobi at the end, you know, at the end of Return of the Jedi, and her ghost is going to be there guiding our new keeper, whoever our new keeper will be.
So does that mean that Michelle Batos is going to be goalkeeping one-handed?
Yeah.
She does have a cybernetic hand. I don't know if you've...
I didn't. I missed that.
Oh,
I've never
yeah,
seen
that was
her without the gloves on.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's why she wears the gloves. She's very sensitive about it. I wouldn't... Everybody out there, don't bring it up. She might headbutt you.
You know, I personally was a very big Sinead Farley fan. I never knew how to pronounce her name, but yet I was still a very big fan. I liked the game she played. I felt like she fit Portland a lot. I will be rooting for her in every game that she plays unless she's playing against Portland.
I don't even sure where she went. Who's she going to?
She ended up with Boston.
Boston.
One of the many trades in the offseason that the Thorns executed.
Well, it's someone named Sinead Farrelly. I think Boston's probably at the right town.
Yeah, I'm sure she will fit in just fine. So next up, we do have a couple of returning players. Emily Mangus, Kendall Johnson, Kat Williamson, Michelle Batos, Tobin Heath, Allie Long, Christine Sinclair, Mana Shim, and Jody Taylor. I personally think I am most excited to see what Mana Shim is going to be able to carve out for herself, what role she's going to have in this new team who have so many players coming in. I think that she's been incredibly useful for the Thorns over the past couple of years and has a great story coming in as a trialist. So I'm really going to be rooting for Mana this season.
She's kind of the little Hawaiian underdog that could.
Indeed. How about you, Patrick? Is there someone in particular you're going to be pulling for this season?
Well, I kind of had a hard time deciding about this because there's a few players that I'm excited. I mean, Tobin Heath, how could you not love Tobin? Mm. I mean, she's just dynamite out there. And, of course, really excited for Mana Shim. I've always been a big fan of hers. And I feel like she's kind of... She hasn't quite fulfilled her potential yet. And when you can see it, though. You can see, like, another season or so. She's still pretty young.
She is. And do you see her more in the attacking forward role, or do you see her as a midfielder?
I see her as a midfielder. I think she's creative. I mean, she's a little bit short to be a more attacking.
Yeah, she can never be like a true number nine. She certainly can be kind of a withdrawn striker or a secondary striker.
Yeah, that's more how I would see her. I think she's really creative on the ball, and she just kind of gets in and out, and she's really tenacious for such a tiny little woman. I just love watching her play. But in spite of that, she still wasn't my choice. I mean, I feel like it's the obvious choice, but Christine Sinclair, the best player in the world, as far as I'm concerned, she's just an insane player. I love watching her play. I love what you can see her thinking as she's playing, and those are my favorite kind of players. You know, the kind of playmaker, your Vivaleri, your Pirlo. I mean, she doesn't play the same position as them necessarily, but you can see that she really has. She's thinking while she's playing. She's not just playing on instinct. And I kind of love the mastermind who's making things happen. That's my favorite kind of player. So, you know, Sink has my heart.
How about you, Emily?
I would agree with Patrick. I'm really excited for Sink. Going to the World Cup and just seeing her face everywhere when we were in Canada, it was absolutely amazing. And then when you come back to Portland and really realizing that we have her, and she just has so much instinct, and so she just thinks so hard. It's amazing to see her like on our pitch. I'm actually really excited to see Beatos too. Like,
About her. Yeah, her too.
I'm like, she has my heart. Like, I started watching last year, and like, I'm really excited to see her development, because I think she grew so much last year with her diving header, and she just got better and better. That I think now that she's had a full year, I think, and now that Anker's staying on coaching, I think she's just going to be absolutely fantastic. I'm really excited to see her.
So then you Emily, are on the Beatos side of the fence rather than the Adrian French side of the fence.
I am. I'm team Beatos. I'm Sicilian. She's Greek. I love everything about her. She's
a sort of swarthy alliance.
Exactly. Exactly. She's super fun to talk to on Twitter. Like, she's super grateful. Like, when they came up to get, you know, when 107, when we do the player award thing, she was just so genuinely sincere. I'm super excited for her. I absolutely adore her, and I think she's really talented, and I think her talent is just going to keep getting better. I think she's going to keep developing, and I think she's going to be a really good keeper.
How about you, Patrick?
So I also love Beatos, but I always have this sort of instinctual second keeper aversion. You know, anytime your first keeper goes out and you have your backup keeper in, you can never quite see how good of a keeper they are necessarily, because I feel like the back line always will protect the goal more when they're a little less sure of the keeper. Now, saying that, I thought she performed really well last season. So I'm not entirely sure. I mean, the header aside, which is, you know, definitely one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in person.
Yes.
And I completely lost my shit when that happened. Besides that, I don't know. I want her to stay in the role, but I'm not sure if she's going to be able to. And this may just be my own terror at the second keeper becoming the primary keeper.
So for listeners who are not aware, the Thorns have picked up Adrian French, who was a keeper who played for the Western New York Flash in 2013. In 2014, she was recovering from an ACL injury, and last year she was playing for Alvaldnes in Norway. So she's a new addition that in 2013, I believe she had five saves in her first match as a goalkeeper, as a rookie. They actually lost that match 1-0 after an atrocious own goal.
She could stop everybody else's.
Everybody else.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a horrible way to lose a match in your first professional match. And so I love Michelle, but I think that the day one starter is going to be Beatos, and the final game starter is going to be French. Interestingly, French was called into the national team and did not make it through camp, or just made it through camp. She was not invited back for the second smaller camp in advance of the Olympics, which we'll be talking about in a little while. So from there, we have a ridiculous number of new players who are joining this team. We have U.S. national team left back Megan Klingenberg, who is coming from the Houston Dash. We have Catherine Reynolds, who is a right back coming from the Washington Spirit. We have Adrian French. We also have Dagny Brynjarsdóttir, who is a midfielder. She has not played professionally in the United States. However, she graduated from Florida State in 2014 and played for Selfoss in her native Iceland and also for the Bayern Munich women's team as well. Lindsay Horan, midfielder from Paris Saint-Germain, is joining as well. Lindsay is the first American woman to skip college and go straight to professional soccer, which is quite an achievement. We are also adding Nadia Nadim, who is a striker who played for Sky Blue in 2014 and 2015. She had an incredible breakout year in 2014, kind of came back down to earth in 2015. While she plays for the Danish national team, she is also a native of Kabul, Afghanistan, really adding to the international flavor of the Thorns. We've also drafted two new players, Mackenzie Berryhill, who is a center back. She was kind of a surprise draft pick out of Arizona State. She's kind of been referred to as one of the Parsons projects. He was known in Washington to develop players that weren't necessarily on the radar. And of course, our number one pick was Emily Sonnet. She's a center back and comes to us from the University of Virginia. Last but not least, we have the international player to be named later. Reportedly, it is Amandine Henry. She is a defensive midfielder, regarded as one of the best in the world. She won the silver ball at the World Cup for being the second best player in the tournament. And she finished 2015 as the second best player in Europe behind German Celia Sasic, who recently retired. Amandine will likely be joining us after her club's season ends. She currently is playing for Olympique Lyon. So, Patrick, who are you excited about the most? Who's the new player that you're jazzed to see on the field?
Well, I'm going to have to be honest. I'm not really familiar with most of them. So the one that I'm really excited to see is Dagny Brynjarsdóttir. I can almost pronounce that.
We're just going to go with Dagny. She's just going to have one name.
She's going to be like Bjork. I mean, if you're going to be from Iceland, you probably are going to have one name.
Yes.
And it's mostly just because I imagine people from Iceland are all, you know, wee little elves. I mean, you see Bjork, and I've seen Sigur Rós in concert, and they're tiny little men.
And Dagny is actually the absolute opposite.
I know,
of
she's
that.
This giant blonde woman.
She is. She's a 5'11 midfielder. Watching her in college, she was a woman among girls.
Oh, that's exciting.
Absolutely destroyed people. Amazing header. Great with the ball at her feet. If you've ever seen a 5'11 defensive midfielder in a women's game, she really dwarfs everyone. Interestingly, I had a conversation with Mark Parsons after the Soccer Made in Portland live show a couple of weeks ago.
Way to name drop.
Yeah, totally.
You can see my selfies if you want with me and him.
Yeah, I did not take pictures. Mainly because I was too nervous to hit the shutter. But Mark told me that he actually expects Dagny to play a little bit more in an offensive role rather than the defensive midfielder role.
Really?
Yeah, not so much as a Diego Valeri who holds the ball, sees the field, plays the perfect pass that nobody else can see, but more of the Man City midfielder with the double name. More like Yaya Toure, who can take the ball across the field and put in a rocket shot from the top of the box. So it's going to be interesting to see how exactly they deploy Dagny, whom is definitely the new player that I am most excited about.
Well, that makes sense because you've already got Sinclair. You can really, it's sort of like a rock band. You can really only have, unless you're the Beatles, you can really only have one genius in the band. And we already have Sinclair.
Mm-hmm.
And so more than one genius just muddies the waters a little bit.
Yeah. Emily, what do you think?
I definitely agree that, you know, you can only have one genius. And I'm so pro Sinclair. It's ridiculous. I'm really excited to see Klingenberg, actually. I absolutely loved her during the World Cup. And I'm really excited that we're adding her to our roster. Plus, it seems like a lot of good things come out of Houston. Also, Reynolds is coming, and so I feel like Parsons has experience playing with or working with her, so that might be a good mashup, but I'm really excited to see what Klingenberg does.
So I think that this is a good time to talk a little bit about formation. Parsons kind of does crazy stuff. He is a little bit of a mad scientist. I was reading today, and there was a great blog post from the Portland Thorns Shears, I believe, is a blog that I found trying to find information out about Parsons and formations.
We will link this on our Facebook page and on our website.
Yeah, we'll link this post up. But he actually deployed a 4-2-4 against the Thorns without a true striker.
Nice.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, it was totally bizarre. The theory from the Shears website was that the 4-2-4 creates lots of triangles and lots of disruption and forces the opposing team to not have a firm defensive shape because there are so many attacking players that are bombing on. So you end up with kind of a 6-4 situation. So I think we're going to see some really interesting stuff.
So he was kind of doing a Mighty Ducks.
Yes.
When they would do the flying V.
It was the football equivalent of the flying V.
All right, folks, you've heard it here. That's it's confirmed. Fantastic. Emilio Estevez will be coaching the Portland Thorns this season.
Parsons is way hotter than Emilio Estevez. Come on now.
Mr. Parsons, you can find Emily at Win the Day.
848. Oh, no. We're already following each other.
Oh.
No, I've already hit that up. I hear that
one might be following the other more than the other way around.
To be fair, I already hear that he has a terrific wife named Hannah and a really cute little daughter, but I'm just going to keep fangirling all over Parsons. It's all right.
So, looking at the lineup, I think that one of the interesting things is that the Thorns don't have a whole lot on the wing. We have a lot of midfielders. We have a lot of forwards. We have a lot of defenders. We don't have a lot of players who are naturally wide and speedy. So I think that what that means is that you're going to see a lot more of Klingenberg on offense, and you're going to see a lot more of Emily Mangus on the right-hand side, or potentially Catherine as well, who is brought in as a right back, bombing up to cover from those outside back positions. For me, in playing with what might be the opening day lineup, the starting 11, and I have fancy paper there.
We're both admiring his charts.
Yeah.
They're in full color, too.
I know. He has a full fancy chart, and I literally have scribbles I did in my car like an hour ago.
And post-it notes. In my mind, opening day, as I said, Amandine Henry will not be joining us until at some point later on in the season. I think that we're going to see...
Isn't that what they said about Vero, and we never got her?
Yeah, that is what we said last season.
Yeah, well, it also happened with Tobin Heath the first season, too. She didn't show up until... Boy, when was it? It was like 2/3 of the way through the season, I think.
Yeah, we might not see Henri until after the Olympics. I really hope that it's before then, but it certainly might not be. So I see us playing in a 4-3-1-2 or a 4-3-3 inverted triangle with the inverted triangle on the top instead of in the middle for you Portland Timbers formation geeks out there. I think that Klingenberg, Sonnet, Williamson, and Mangus will be our starting back line on opening day. I think that the midfield will be Dagny, Lindsay Horan, and Tobin Heath. I think that you will see Ali Long as a center attacking midfielder and Christine Sinclair and Nadia Nadim in front of her in a dual striker system. What do you guys think of my starting lineup?
I think that's sexy as fuck is what I think.
And what is not sexy about fuck?
Exactly. Well, if you work in a hospital, I can tell you some horror stories, but...
The cleanup could be...
Yeah, exactly. The foreign bodies get a little messy. To be honest, I'm not a formation geek at all, so the fact that you envisioned all of this is really amazing to me, but I'll go with it. Again, I hardly ever make predictions about scores or formations. I'm one of those people that like to be pleasantly surprised, number one. And number two, I'm so superstitious that as soon as I'm like, oh, yeah, Sinclair's going to be up there,
that'll be the game she doesn't play or she gets injured
on her offense. So I will agree with you wholeheartedly. This is a really amazing graph. Wow.
Well, can you guess which one of the three of us is the Asperger's type Rain Man autistic numbers guy? It's not me.
I feel like I need to Instagram that. Like, you know what? We need to put this on our website.
This is going
to
go out on the internet right now.
Yeah, I'm going to put that, and then I'm going to put my notes, and we can figure out here. Yeah, we're at,
Eric's anal retentive notes.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'm going to put my notes next to this, and then we can figure out who's who. Oh, and
I that should totally actually be a Twitter feed. Listeners, someone should create Eric's anal retentive notes.
There'll be a lot of tweets. It'll be at very regular intervals.
And mock me incessantly on Twitter.
And then figure out whose notes are whose.
Yeah, I think that's going to be pretty easy to tell. No, I'm pretty bad with predicting formations until I'm really comfortable knowing all the players. And because I haven't seen most of these women play, I can't quite get a grasp of it yet. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to leave this one to you until I get a little bit more information.
All right. Right.
But we all know that if I drop some matchsticks on the ground, you'd be able to tell me how many there are, right?
That's right. However, things are going to change dramatically when Amandine Henri joins the club. I think we're going to be looking at a different formation entirely, and I think that we're going to see Ali Long relegated to the bench. Midway through the season, I think we're going to be playing a 4-4-2 with a diamond in the center of the pitch, with Dagny playing as the attacking midfielder and Amandine Henri as the base of the triangle. I also think that with the Olympics and 7-8 players going from this team to play in the Olympics, that we're going to see a whole lot of different players besides this best case 11.
I read a thing about Parsons and how he's going to not Riley this up. I'm bringing that back. So he's not...
For the record, I do think that Riley should be a verb.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. So what I read is that Parsons is not going to Riley up this season like he did with the World Cup, and that he's really going to keep the players and the formations, and he's going to really keep the cohesion together with the team. So when the players leave for the Olympics and they come back to the Olympics, we're just not a hot scrambling mess. There's still cohesion. If you saw what the rain, remember when the Thorns came back and we played the Rain, and the Rain were so cohesive back from the World Cup, though they only had two players leave, they were still really cohesive. And that's because the Reigns player, they had a plan. Their coach had a plan versus Riley really didn't. So Parsons has looked at that and he's like, okay, he's already planning for the Olympics. He already has a plan in place and he's going to try his best. At least this is what I read and what he's quoted as saying, that he's going to keep the cohesion going and keep the players, so when they come back, they can acclimate and we don't get our asses kicked from Seattle or whoever we play.
So what
is it? Which is probably going to be Seattle, because we were playing them 4 times this year.
We need more teams in the league.
So my question is why does Portland continue to hire coaches that don't have a plan? We've had 2 coaches now and neither of them seem to have planned further ahead than lunchtime.
Well, I think
one of them did win a title without planning ahead. However, if you listen to the Timbers and the ESPN announcers, first champions since
the
Blazers.
That's a discussion I'd like to get into in a moment. I'm not sure if we're wrapping up lineups yet or not, but that's actually a good segue into it. Yeah, so there was a post on the Rose City Riveters website, which again will be linked on our website. And it was by Nisa Drake, and it was talking about how during the awards presentation at the opening day for the Timbers on Sunday, how they referred to the Timbers as the first championship since the Blazers won in
77.
And how disheartening that was for some of the hardcore Thorns fans who are also Timbers fans, let alone how much disheartening it must have been for the actual players, which I'm sure were watching the game as well. It's disheartening, I think, is the word. I mean, what does a women's team have to do? I mean, there's not a lot of professional sports in Portland. We have 3 teams. And then the Timbers, the Thorns, and the Blazers, right? Am I missing anybody? Unless we're going to talk about the Winterhawks. So I guess we have 4.
We also have baseball. We have the Hops and we have the Pickles.
Yeah, but those are pretty low down on the
I'm just
professional
saying,
totem pole.
And they're not actually in Portland.
Yeah.
The Pickles are, right?
The Pickles are going to be in Portland. The Hops are like Beaverton-ish. And then, I mean, if you want to get into college, we can. I can name off all the college teams I support too.
But I mean, we're but we're not.
And my favorites.
We're not like Chicago, for instance, or New York, or LA, where there's 300 different teams to follow. There's not a lot of numbers to hold around in your head here. And so, how? I mean, this only happened a couple of years ago.
And frankly, two of those teams are owned by the same people.
Yes, it's so there's no excuse when it's in the same stadium that hosts the team that won the first national championship at Portland in decades to not give acknowledgement to that.
Can I devil's advocate this?
Absolutely.
I'm just going to double advocate this for a minute. I agree with that they won the championship. It's amazing. You know, I don't know if I've actually looked for a banner in Providence for the Thorns.
There is.
Okay. And I don't remember the announcers because I was probably too busy celebrating in Columbus to hear the announcers when they said that about the Timbers.
Oh, this was on Sunday.
I actually was not at the stadium on Sunday. I watched the game on TV. And so they said it at least twice.
Okay. I was in wristband line and then I was in the stadium, so.
There was alcohol involved.
You know what? I brought mimosas to line culture at 4:30 in the morning and walked through the entire wristband line with mimosas and muffins and Girl Scout cookies and fed everybody in line culture.
You were the hero.
Allegedly. There was no alcohol consumed.
I did. I had a huge bottle of champagne and I fed everybody from tent 2 all the way past Sam and past the Matt Club.
You were the hero that Portland deserves, but maybe not the hero that Portland needs.
Thank you. I digress. Yeah, so I wasn't paying much attention to what ESPN was saying. But again, I'm going to double advocate this for a minute, is I feel like, again, that was 2013. A lot of the girls on the Thorns won the World Cup, and they had the most highly viewed World Cup, right? And we killed Japan. And they got a lot of accolade this summer for that. I feel like this just might be the Timbers' 15 minutes of fame. So, like, let them have that. Like, does it really need to be attached to the Thorns right now? I don't feel like it really necessarily does.
Well, I don't feel that we need to attach it to the Thorns at all. I mean, we should be celebrating the Timbers right now because the Timbers have won the championship. Right. However, to pretend like it didn't exist and go back decades rather than, you know, 2 years.
I just don't feel like people are doing it on purpose.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think it was a purposeful snub, but I think that's actually the problem.
Right. It's the nonchalant sexism.
I think it's just the lack of respect for the women's game.
Is it really a lack of respect or is it just
an oversight?
Yeah.
But it's their team. It's Peregrine Sports' team. Like, that doesn't make any sense because if it was a different owner in a different stadium, I'll give you that.
No, I see your point. But here's the thing. It's like, I know we're the best, right? I know we have the best coach. I know we have the best stadium. I know we have the best supporters. I know we have the best girls. And I know that they love us, right? Do we really have to prove that? Do we really need to be going, hey, you forgot about us. You forgot about us. Why don't we just go play on the pitch and be like, you know what? We fucking know we're the best. You know, it's when you have that confidence, you know, when you see confident people, they're not the ones saying, hey, you forgot about me. No, you just go and play and you play a fucking good game and you let people recognize you. And then they eventually be like, oh yeah, shit, you're right, you were the 2013 champions.
You know, this might be an interesting thing to we'll put this up on the website, or you can talk on Facebook about this, and next show we'll go through your comments and read the ones that we feel are the most interesting and we can talk about it.
I think that's great.
We'd love to hear from you guys.
So I think that we ought to take a quick break here. We will be right back. Emily, why don't you tell us about the Twitter poll.
I ran a Twitter poll today. I asked you in Twitter Nation, and you can find me at WinTheDay848, if you guys were excited about Mark Parsons, our new coach, coming from Washington. I asked if you are excited about him, because I, for one, am very excited. I think he's young, he's handsome, he's talented, and I think that he will do really good things for our team and for Portland, and he'll bring a new youth. So I am super excited for this. You guys in Twitterville, the people that voted, 84% of you said that you had all the excites, and 16% said meh. Now, granted, one person did tweet me, J.M. Clark or John M. Clark 3 tweeted that they wanted to vote ironically because it's Portland, but they are really excited for Parsons.
Oh, well, you should have put an ironic yes or no.
I know.
In there.
You know, I just didn't know how to make that an option.
Can you say yes with horn rim glasses?
I didn't know how to make a hipster yes.
I mean, like, maybe it's a yes with a henna tattoo.
Oh, that would work. Or maybe, like, you know, yes on a fixie.
Right? Or, like, yes, wearing the hipster glasses that actually don't have a prescription in them.
Oh, yes, cortado.
Mm. Yeah.
It's really digging deep there. Just, you know, coffee folk.
I also made realize by this that I guess all of you people using a third-party Twitter app, which I actually didn't know that was a thing, like SageCat or Matt Ryan on Twitter, he said that he actually couldn't see my poll, but he was super excited. So, and I guess, Eric, you use a third-party app.
I use Tweetbot, and so I couldn't see the actual poll part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I use, I don't even know what I use, but it's a third-party one as well.
I didn't even know that was a thing. I just use the Twitter app on my iPhone like an old person, I guess.
You are pretty old.
I know. Don't tell them. They can't see me. They can't.
She's 107.
I know, but I look like
she
I'm 23.
She doesn't look a day older than 86.
She's a hot 86.
Man, I was going for like 23. You guys are killing my game. Come on.
1923 more like.
Hey-o. You know what? Everything old comes new again. I'm going to own it.
It doesn't help. It kind of away.
Well, it is bedazzled, so it does add a little sparkle
to it. That's right, the bedazzled walker.
You know what? Prohibition's going to come back, and then I will be in style.
No,
again.
I'll be out of a job then.
No, I'm Sicilian. I can help you get rid of that shit. It'll be all right.
Emily's actually the 14th Kardashian.
So, yeah, I ran this poll. It started a whole Twitter conversation. Miss Jolene, or Joe Thompson, is also very excited about Mark Parsons, but we're talking to you now, Mark Parsons. Mr. Mark Parsons, I don't know how you want to be addressed yet or if there's a proper way to address you.
I believe he prefers Monsignor Mark Parsons.
Coach.
It might be Marky Mark.
Marky Mark Parsons. Oh, yes. That's good.
But he's from England, so is it Sir Marky Mark Parsons? Coach Sir Marky Mark Parsons?
He's pretty young. It might be Squire Marky Mark.
Oh,
the Reverend Dr. Squire Sir Marky Mark Parsons.
Boom. Yeah. There it is. That's it.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back to the recording because I have no idea what I just said.
Miss Jolene would like to know what his other favors are, like what's your favorite cookies. So, you know, just when we win the NLS championship, you know, we have things prepared for you. Anyway, after this whole conversation on Twitter, Mark Parsons actually just tweeted me because, you know, we're homies like that.
Moments ago.
Yes, moments ago, because we're cool like that. I don't know how to describe the tweet. It was emoticon.
Googly eyes.
Yeah.
I would say horrified googly eyes, or they... what's the emotion behind those googly eyes?
Well, how am I interpreting it, or is how the rest of the world going to interpret it? I want to say they're googly eyes he only has for me.
It's a one-off emoji that he had custom crafted for you.
I've seen it before.
The emoji is actually going to self-destruct.
But good thing I screen capped it.
Yes, Mark Parsons, you heard that here. Your googly eyes have been screen grabbed.
You know, just if you want to try and be a Merritt Paulson, it's just not going to work because we're on to you.
That's right. The shit's getting tweet bunkered.
That was the poll I ran, and we're really excited for Mark Parsons, or at least 84% also seems to be really excited. How do you guys feel about this?
Well, I'm concerned about what kind of cookies do you think Mark Parsons likes best?
Oh my God, if it's something with raisins in it.
Yeah, there's no way. He's got to be anti-raisin. I think he's a Thin Mint man. Just like taking a measure of a man, I think he's a Thin Mint guy.
See, as an Englishman, Jaffa cakes all the way. It's going to be Jaffa cakes.
Yeah, what the hell?
With the orange filling.
Like, what the hell are cookies in
England?
Biscuits.
Biscuits.
Yeah.
Biscuits.
But
what are biscuits in England?
They don't have biscuits.
They don't have biscuits in England?
No, they're English,
kind of
not American.
What deprived lives do you lead, Mark Parsons?
I know, they're really
That's
simple.
Why he came to Portland.
Exactly.
Maybe we need to go to Pine State Biscuits with Mark Parsons.
He's just going to be like, why do I want a bunch of cookies? It'd be so confusing.
Pine State cookies.
Now I'm confused, but hungry.
FYI, I'm hand out Girl Scout cookies in line culture. If you need your cookie fix, Mark Parsons or anyone else.
Thorns fans are a bit different than Timbers fans. Timbers fans tend to come in. Soccer, while it's not as big in this country as basketball or baseball or you know American football, it's still kind of popular. But women's soccer isn't necessarily everybody's go-to sport. And yet all three of us are pretty devoted to it. And I was just wondering, what brought you to the game?
I played and worked in an indoor soccer arena in high school and college, and then kind of fell out for a minute. And then I was going to Timbers games, and my Timbers family said, hey, you know, it's Thorns opening day. You should come to the triple bullpen. We're making signs. And I was like, honestly, I was like, I don't have anything better to do today. So I went to a Thornscape because I had been hearing about them. And I was like, I should check this out. And when I got there, it was amazing soccer. But honestly, I started going for the social aspect of it. And then I got there and it blew my mind once I got into the stadium. Like, the soccer was so good. The talent was so good. To find out, like, all of these girls are, like, national U.S. players. It was just mind-blowing. And I liked their skill and the technicality of the game so much more than the men. And then I just got stuck in. And now here I am doing a podcast after a World Cup and going to the World Cup and a 2-time season ticket holder. Here I am, stuck in.
Emily, I think you hit the nail on the head talking about the athleticism and the technicality. The women's game, to me, is just beautiful. It's totally different from the men's game, but it is completely equal and in some ways superior too. I think that you see a lot of the kind of brute force in the men's game, the fastest player, the strongest player, bullying people off of position. And what you see in the women's game is a technical ability and a beauty to the game that is unmatched. And so I first saw Thorne's game on TV the first season, I believe. And saw that and went, oh my God, these people are just warriors. They're amazing. They fall down and they get right back up. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of foreign in soccer. And so I immediately, like during the game, bought tickets for the next Thorne's home game and thought, I have to see this in person. And just absolutely fell in love. I am soon to be the father of a baby girl.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
My wife and I are adopting. We found out 3 days ago, and so we have 4 weeks to prepare.
I just found this out 5 minutes ago.
And I learned that we offer congratulations, not condolences.
It's really important to me, as someone who's been hoping to be a father and now who is going to be the father of a baby girl, that anybody can grow up to be anything they want, even a professional athlete. And so to see these women be the best in the world and have them be the best in the world in our backyard is amazing. And it's something that's really, really personal to me. I think that brings up a different point, which is that not all of our women on the Thorns are truly professional. Not all of them are even making a living wage.
Most of them are not making a living wage. I mean, the league minimum is just under $7,000. It's $6,800 and change. Where the highest paid women's player in the world is Marta. She plays in Sweden, I think.
You know, I think the interesting thing Patrick brought up, the minimum salary is under $7,000 for a women's professional soccer player, kind of putting professional in air quotes, because that means that if playing soccer is your full-time job, you're on food stamps. And that's insulting and offensive, and we should all be angry about this.
Do we know what the men's salary is, though?
Minimum this year is $56,000. It's going to go up to $72,000.
Oh, the men's, excuse me. Okay.
In two seasons in Major League Soccer. And in Europe, where attendance is a tenth of what you see at Providence Park.
Men's or women's?
For women's. Average attendance is around 1,500 for...
Women's game?
Yeah, for the women's game, both in the Frauen Bundesliga and in both the first and second divisions in England.
I mean, that's what it is across the U.S., though. I mean, if you look at games, like, even in Chicago, like, they're, like, playing on a crappy, like, track field.
The Chicago pitch is just atrocious.
For the record, as a Chicagoan, it's not in Chicago, it's in Lisle.
Okay, whatever. Right.
Which is like saying in Portland that it's in the Dalles.
That being said, while they're playing for 1,500 people in Germany and England, they are also have most of their players are playing for six-figure salaries.
They also have socialized healthcare. It's a whole different system community.
The Thorns are one of the best attended female games in the world. There have been several Australian professional matches and I believe the Japanese championship match.
By the way, congratulations, Matildas.
Yes, they had higher attendance than the Thorns have, but the Thorns have the two highest in the United States. Women's professional soccer league attendance is one for last year's first game after the World Cup, the Portland Thorns Seattle Reign was 21,000, and then the previous season was a 19,000 attendance for Portland versus Houston. Historically, the women's game was better attended than the men's, and until 1921, when the British Football Association banned women from playing professionally or playing in football association pitches where people could watch the games, they had 53,000 people at a 1920 match at Goodison Park in Liverpool for a women's professional league match in 1920.
The English have given us so many good things. I mean, we've got the Beatles, we've got the IT crowd, and we've got excellent tea, but I mean, they've given us colonialism and banning women from soccer. You know,
and biscuits.
I know, and the confusion between biscuits and cookies, it's a little appalling.
The British giveth and they take away.
Are we being sarcastic about the British now? What? Yes. Okay.
So Marta, who is probably the most famous female footballer in the world, played last year for Sweden. Before that, played for the Western New York Flash. She made $400,000 last year a season, which for the women's game was very good compared to most players. But compared to the men's team, that's like a low level DP.
Right. Or what Messi makes in a week.
What Messi makes in 15 minutes. So when the highest paid player in women's soccer is making $400,000, the league minimum is $6,842. Now think about that. That's not just the money you're making while you're playing. You have to stay in shape all year. So you're actually working all year to make $6,842 during the months that the women's team is actually playing. That's insane.
In fact, the Portland Thorns last year had a player leave and quit the team in the playoff push so that she could go into debt to medical school.
Oh, yeah. I miss her. I really liked her.
Who was that?
Hollenbeck.
Oh, it's Hollenbeck.
Van Hollen.
Van Hollenbeck.
Yeah.
Van Hollenbeck.
Hollenbeck, girl. I know. I came up with such a good chant for her, too, at the end of the season, and then she left, and now I can't use it again.
Well, according to Esquire, look, think about this for a second. The highest paid player again. So we've talked about Marta. So the highest paid players in other sports. In Major League Baseball, the highest paid player is Miguel Cabrera for the Detroit Tigers. He's making $31 million. NBA is Carmelo Anthony for the New York Knicks at $24.8 million. NFL Aaron Rodgers for the Packers, $22 million.
I love how you're all naming guys that have cheated on their wives, too.
That's another thought. NHL was either Patrick Kane or Jonathan Toews for the Blackhawks at $10.5 million, and I may be mispronouncing that second guy's name. And Kaká, of course, for Orlando City for Major League Soccer at $7.1 million. So the lowest of those is $7.1 million. The highest paid female player is $400,000, and she's not the highest paid player in America. She's the highest paid player in the world. I mean, what does Messi and Ronaldo make?
Way more than that.
Way more. There's zeros added to that.
Yes, multiple zeros added to that. I think the struggle is distinctly American in that while we have the best female players in the world, almost exclusively playing in the NWSL, we've not figured out how to market soccer in the United States. They are being punished for the lack of soccer success from the men's game. If these same players were playing in Germany or in England, if the NWSL was playing from London to Liverpool to Newcastle on Tyne, you would see television contracts and that type of revenue coming in, and that money would be able to pay the players a far better wage.
Well, to be fair, England does have its female teams, and Mark Parsons was the coach of the Chelsea Ladies, in fact, so they don't get much respect there either. The only place I can think of they really get respect is in France, which is where, of course, we're getting our next big player from. It may be in Sweden, too, because obviously Marta is making enough money in Sweden to make it worth it.
The interesting thing in France and in Germany and in England is that the men's teams, those women's teams are associated with all take those clubs at a loss. They don't make money. They are money losers, but they feel that it's important to do. The British Football Association is injecting millions of dollars to keep girls playing soccer, despite the fact that it's not a money-making venture right now.
Also, the insulting names for all the teams. They don't have their own names. It's always the...
Oh, yeah, the Everton Ladies,
yeah, the Everton
Chelsea Ladies.
Just give them their own name. How hard is that? That's very insulting. It's like a comedian or, you know, when you have to doctress. Is that a word? Doctress?
No, it's not a word.
You can tweet Emily at WinTheDay
848
on Twitter. She'll take all of my criticism. So just send it to her and just let it go. Just tell her what you think.
That's fine. My phone is in my locker most of the day while I'm at work anyway, and I don't get good reception at the hospital. So I do have a couple thoughts. I'm going to double advocate again because, hey, why not? I do have a couple thoughts on the money making thing. I really want to know how they're calculating the sums of money. Like, are they, Messi's making this shitload of money, right? Is that all of his contracts, all of his advertising, all of it? Or is that just what he's getting from the club versus?
That's just his wage.
Okay. Versus what our girls or what women are making in the NWSL. Is that just what they're getting? And is that what they're getting from their advertisements and everything? Or is that what they're just getting from the club? I'd be really interested to see how that's calculated.
So Messi is currently making from the club, his salary from the club, not including his endorsements as the most famous soccer player in the world, 26.5 million euros.
Is that club or country?
Which is 37.5 million US.
Ooh.
And that is club. That is not country.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's just the base salary. And with the thorns in the NWSL, the dollar figures that we've been talking about are base salary. However, there are strict limits on the types of compensation that they can directly offer. There is some housing and meals benefit that they can provide.
It's like they're homeless.
There are minimal stipends that are allowed, from my understanding of the NWSL incredibly arcane salary limitations and rules, because it's basically MLS on crack when it comes to the rules governing player salaries.
I also have a total compensation for Messi here now.
Did he have some problem with his taxes?
Yeah, he didn't pay them. Well,
I mean, he barely makes any money. His total earnings are only $64.7 million a year between his salary and his winnings. And he's also got $41.7 million in endorsements.
He better pay his taxes and come to Seattle in June is all I have to say. I actually haven't done my taxes, so whatever. I'm ranting. Sorry.
Damn government.
You heard it here first. Leo Messi, pay your taxes.
Right? I want to see you in the Copa Games in June.
There are significant zeros between what the best men's and best women's player does in the world. And granted, Messi draws a lot more eyes than Marta does. And no one can argue that.
Yeah, I had to pull teeth to get a day off to go see him in Seattle.
But it's still like, even though, you know, it takes money to make money. And if they're worried about the health of they've already, I think, established the health of the league in the last few seasons. I know that not every market is doing as well as we are. But then again, they built most of the teams in Lisle, Illinois, Syracuse, New York, Rochester.
Like, what if we were to pay all players, home and visiting, a portion of gate receipts?
What if all we have to worry about is getting them minimum wage? Because the federal poverty line is $11,000 and change. And so they make almost half of what the federal poverty line is. So I'm just saying, we don't have to give them all $1 million a year. That's ridiculous. But let's just get everybody, like, imagine they're working a minimum wage job 40 hours a week. That's what they should make. They're professional athletes. We're paying to go see them. They shouldn't have to be rooming 16 people to a house like they're...
Yeah, for Merritt Paulson's sake, I really hope that Labor Director Brad Avakian is not listening to the podcast right now. Otherwise, Merritt, you're going to be in a lot of trouble about these wage bills.
So what else do they do? Like, I'm so confused. So, like, what else are they doing, or how are they getting around it?
Some of them are school teachers.
Some of them teach soccer. Some of them get money from their families. So they live with host families.
So how does the NWSL can only pay them this? Is it because, like, they're a club, or, like...
Because ultimately, in most places, NWSL is a money-losing entity.
It's a money sink because they're in places like Lisle.
But, like, doesn't a job have to pay you minimum wage? Like, I'm just confused.
It's a contract, not an hourly thing. So they're paying by contract. It's arcane employment law.
And the other thing is that the U.S. and Canadian national federations pay the salaries of the national team players. So the gazillions or the million or two that Alex Morgan was making was paid by the U.S. national.
Right. That wasn't coming out of the thorns.
It wasn't coming out of the thorns.
Harder for country than club.
The salary cap for an NWSL team, which I did see today, is really not that high. It's like $230,000 or something like that. That's the salary cap for everybody.
Except for four national team players for the United States and Canada.
Really?
Yep. Whom the Soccer Federation can pay whatever they want in independently negotiated contracts, and that does not count toward the team's salary cap.
Really?
Yep.
Interesting.
Oh, here we go. Salary cap. I'm sorry. It's $265,000. Again, this is according to Esquire.
Wow.
You were going to be more financially successful bagging groceries at Fred Meyer than you are on a minimum salary NWSL contract.
Oh, man. Fred Meyer, you're going to be getting health care, too.
Yeah.
If you're working that.
Well, that's like when
Maybe
Mallory...
Maybe even a 401k.
Well, yeah. That's like when Mallory Pugh decided to go to college instead of play for the Thorns, and everyone was like, wait, you decided this. Why would you not want to play professional soccer and, you know, go to college instead? Well, when you see the salary and what she could be making with, you know, the Thorns versus actually, you know, getting her MBA by going to UCLA, not really a tough choice for a 17-year-old, and especially if I was her parents, like, yeah, go to UCLA. Also, she's going to be 21 by the time the next World Cup runs around. Like, she's going to be fine. She has plenty of time to play soccer and get a solid education.
I think that the question with Mallory Pugh, that's totally true. She would have been a national team player, so she would have had a six-figure
contract.
That's
true. I didn't realize that was...
But what happens in 2 years? Maybe she has a down year and doesn't get called into the national
team. She twists an ankle.
Yeah, ACL injury.
Yeah. What happens then? Then she's a 20-year-old without a college degree who may qualify for a minimum NWSL contract.
Who doesn't have health insurance.
Who doesn't have health insurance.
Or college education.
I don't blame Mallory Pugh at all for going to UCLA. I applaud her for making the decision on her own.
It'd be a tough decision.
It would be an incredibly tough decision. And
she already has an international cap at 17. The girl is talented.
She's incredibly talented. I can't wait to see her play professionally. And I hope that we still retain her rights so that in 3 or 4 years, we get to see her wearing the red and black and playing in Providence Park.
If you think about it this way, the Portland Timbers fans just crowdsourced enough money to bring in the girl who flicked off the cameras during the championship ceremony to Don Garber. So in 4 hours, we, because I chipped in a little money myself, raised about $1,800 to bring her here. Now think about that. $1,800 is just under a third of what the minimum for some of these players is making. And we just threw this money in as a lark. We could crowdsource more money for these players than they're getting paid is what I'm trying to get at.
Right. I understand that.
I mean, should we just start our own team and crowdsource the funds?
Yeah.
That would be fun.
We could probably pay them better.
That'd be awesome. I'd crowdsource that.
All right, guys. That'll be on Kickstarter later this evening. Check the website for details.
And the Riveting Podcast will only take a minimal administrative fee out of each donation.
For America.
Basically.
For freedom.
Yes. Yes,
for freedom.
Exactly.
We're making America great again.
Exactly.
With our gigantic hands.
Our hands are of a very generous size. I'm not sure if any of you guys have traveled to any other towns to watch the Thorns play. I know Emily, you've gone to the World Cup, and Canada's different because Canada's, of course, awesome, and they support everybody, and we're all very envious of them.
I still haven't tried poutine in all the times that I've been to Vancouver.
Wow, that's... Actually, no, come to think of it, neither have I.
Okay.
I've been there about 5 times, too.
Are you going to Vancouver away?
Oh, absolutely. And every year, I have this list of things to do in Canada. Eat a Tim Hortons donut.
Oh, I did that. There.
Yeah, I did that. I finally got that through last time.
Yeah, I did that during the playoffs.
Oh, no, that's not true. I did try poutine. I haven't had a Japa dog yet. That's what I missed.
Oh, okay.
No, I had poutine. When you go to Vancouver, I'm going to tell you where to go. It's awesome.
Everyone that I talk to, this is usually at like 3 o'clock in the morning at Doolin's. No, this is the best poutine. This is the best poutine. This is the best poutine. Just tweet us your best poutine places that you've found in Vancouver.
The point I was trying to make was if you've been to other cities to watch the Thorns play, have you noticed the difference in how the city reacts to the team or how the stadium reacts to the team? I mean, I feel like in Portland, we have this sort of magical pocket in the United States of really devoted soccer fans, and where you can actually have a stadium and a women's team and we can get 21,000 or 20, was it 21?
21.
21,000 people there to see a women's soccer game, which is absurd in most places.
Or have someone else's national championship that isn't any of our teams and have 13,000 people show up. It was really fun.
I just remember that Hope Solo forgot that Portland had won a championship before her and still has a championship before her.
Wow, it's sort of like Portland still has a championship before Seattle in men's soccer, too.
That's exactly
weird.
I know. What's going on that we keep beating them? Seattle has... Seattle must have won a championship by now, right? The men's or the women's team. Right?
No.
They're Seattle. Guys, anyone? You know what? If you have the answer, just send it to our Twitter.
At least they still have a basketball team.
I was just going to say that. I was going to say, how's their basketball team doing?
So we live in this magic pocket of devoted soccer fans, but other towns just don't have it as good.
They don't. It's really strange all the way around. I lived in D.C. for a decade, and the Barra Brava and the Screaming Eagles are amazing at RFK.
I don't know what any of that sentence just meant.
Supporters groups.
Okay.
For DC United.
Okay. For a Northwest native, meant nothing to me.
Yeah, they're amazing, and RFK can really get rocking for DC United matches. But other than that, it's a lot different up here in Neverland. I do have to say, Orlando City should get a lot of props because they're doing a lot of things right. I think that their women's team is going to be really impressive, even though they don't yet have a full-time striker.
They'll figure it out. They'll do
they'll make do.
They'll do the 4-2-4, right?
It's exactly. They're going to be doing a 4-2-4 without a striker. It's going to be all duct tape and baling wire as my Nebraska roots. That's how they're going to keep that team together.
So the team is essentially the USS Enterprise.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, wow. But, so geeky. So cool.
Oh, yeah. It's devolving quickly. Orlando is doing a lot of things right. They had in the men's game, they actually had the fifth largest attendance in the world this last weekend for football.
Oh, I saw that. That was pretty impressive.
It was really impressive.
In the world.
and they are admittedly copying everything that Portland has done right. When they started the men's franchise, they came out here and studied everything from the Timbers Army to the Timbers front office. And when creating the OC women's team, they've done exactly the same thing. I think that Orlando City is going to be the rival for Portland when it comes to soccer in the United States.
That'd be great.
I think that's going to happen quickly.
I mean, I know that I was kind of getting down on Paulson and the pay structure, but I really think on the whole, they've treated the Thorns very, very respectfully. I mean, the Thorns get equal billing in the stadium when you look at where all of the merchandising is and where they have the crests and where the names are. The Thorns are not second rate. There. The Thorns are same size right next to the Timbers.
I mean,
each have a star over the crest, too.
What other NWSL team has their own team store in the stadium? Or has their own stadium?
Doesn't share with the high school team, like,
or a track
Houston,
field.
Actually, to be fair, Houston followed our lead.
Okay.
And good for them. You know, I can't believe I'm saying good for something in Texas besides barbecue and maybe Scheinerbach, arguably. But they really, I feel like they've really put their money where their mouth is. So good for them on the dash.
They still can't fill their stadium.
And Scheinerbach only if you're starting at Lone Star.
Oh, certainly. I've got some Q&As here. So every week we're going to be soliciting Qs from you for us to A. You can send those to us on our Twitter account at RivetingPDX.
You should also CC Portland Police Bureau at... for those solicitation requests.
You can also get to us on our Facebook page, or you can even go to our website, which is rivetingpdx.com. There will be content there eventually, probably soon. But anyway, here's some questions we got from mostly from Twitter here. First one I got was from at John M. Clark 3.
Oh, yeah. He was tweeting me. He was the one that tweeted meh on my poll because he wanted to be ironic.
Well, John M. Clark 3, you may be ironic with your voting, but your question is actually pretty reasonable. Question is, what is going to happen to our attendance numbers this year? Up, down, or flat? And I thought that was a good question with that certain striker who never really played for us and never really did anything for us being gone. What's that going to do to our attendance numbers, do you think?
I think that our attendance numbers are going to be about the same. While Alex Morgan drew in a large crowd.
Oh, is that her name?
I think it might be. A large crowd of preteen girls. I do think that the players that we're bringing in and the brand of soccer that we're going to be playing under Mark Parsons is going to bring people in and bring people in who truly appreciate the game. I was a little disappointed last season, the first match after the World Cup, with the amount of applause that the Seattle Reign players got. I am a United States citizen. I was thrilled for the United States national team, but I swear to God, I'm never going to cheer Hope Solo when she appears in Providence Park.
I mean, I wouldn't say those things to her face because she tends to get a little intoxicated and violent.
I'm sorry, Hope.
All right, so I also had a question here from Tim Olson, who is...
No relation.
No relation, but he's really Eric's fake brother. Question was, with all the changes in the offseason, from coaching staff changes to big-name players departing and arriving, do you expect it to take some time for the team to develop good chemistry? I'm going to leave this one for you, Eric. This sounds like up your alley.
I think it's going to take a little bit of time, and that mainly is because that we're going to have our defensive midfielder not showing up until halfway through the season, so we're going to be changing formations. I do think that Parsons realizes from the very beginning that is going to be his biggest challenge, and I have a lot of faith in Mark's ability to face that head on and realize that he's going to have to figure out a way to compensate for that.
All right. Emily, any thoughts on that?
I think we're going to be really good. I think we're going to be really cohesive. I think that's why we brought Parsons in. I think that's the job of a really good coach, and I feel like Parsons can do what Riley couldn't, and I feel like that's what the offseason's for, is learning the cohesion, learning each other, and getting to know each other. We're already seeing that with the Timbers, as they already have better cohesion, and the new players are adapting, and I feel like that's what the Thorns are going to be able to do, and I feel like Parsons is young enough, vibrant enough, and talented enough that he'll make all the players and the Thorns mesh together.
Tim Olson also had another question I thought was a pretty good one. I thought I'd let him have two questions here. He said he's excited to see Nadine Onger staying on as a coach. How do you think she's going to impact the team?
I think the obvious answer is improve the goalkeeping. Honestly, I'm not sure Betos is a good keeper. Franch was an excellent keeper before her ACL injury. I think that Franch's probably biggest challenge is going to be reaction time and figuring out how to compensate for a potentially weaker knee, if that is indeed the case. I wonder if Ongerer's experience as someone who aged, who was slower as she got older, as we all are.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah. Emily is just as fast right now as she was 10 years ago.
Faster.
Watch out. I wonder if Ongerer might be able to help Adriana Franch and instruct her and kind of teach her how to compensate for any potential loss of speed or reaction time from the ACL injury.
All right, I've got one more question here, and it was, Eric, I think this one goes to you. How can we trust you if you can't spell quote-unquote our? And I believe this is about the spelling on our Twitter account.
Yeah, you can't trust me, Lexi. I'm really sorry. At least you found out early. I am completely untrustworthy because of the typo.
And the Asperger's.
Right. Well, there's that too. However, my charts are voluminous and very pretty.
I will be sending out that picture. I will.
All right, that wraps up my questions.
Emily, anything else from you?
I think I'm good.
All right. So we've wrapped up all the charts, all the post-it notes.
One more thing. If anybody has any corrections for us, if we've got anything wrong or you feel like there's something we missed, please get in touch with us. You can get in touch with us on our Facebook page, which is on Riveting. Just look for us. You can look for us at RivetingPDX on Twitter or our website, which is rivetingpdx.com. And let us know what we missed or what we messed up, which I'm sure... There's so, so
I'm sure that's
so
going to be a
many.
Really long list.
Yeah, kill my battery. Yeah.
In fact, please use Twitter for all corrections. That way you're limited to 140 characters.
Yeah, please.
Or you can Snapchat it, but only if you're attractive and it's going towards Emily.
Yep, my Snapchat is WinTheDay848.
So thank you, Portland. This is the Riveting Podcast. I am Eric.
I'm Patrick.
I'm Jane.
Have a good night.